Hi, I'm Jade, and welcome back to We're Not Your Typical.
And I'm Sophie. Today, we welcome Josh White on the show, an ADHDer and a recovering addict. Josh shares his inspiring story of what it's like being a child with ADHD to where he is today.
Enjoy the show.
Josh.
Hello.
Welcome. Thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thank you for asking me.
So, Josh, we are aware that you have a diagnosis of ADHD.
I do.
And you've always suffered from a young age with addiction.
Correct.
Talk to us. Tell us your story.
It's a weird one, to be honest with you. I've had ADHD now since I was, well, I've probably had it my whole life. I do think you were born with ADHD.
Agreed.
I definitely think that it's something that I picked up from my family along the way. And as a kid, I always felt very different, very different.
From like, what age? Sorry. From around
four,
what age?
Four, five. Like,
really?
Yeah, I can't remember things, but I just remember always feeling different. And someone actually said it to you once. It's like feeling like you're in the Truman Show, like constantly, like you're part of something else. You just don't feel like, it's weird. As someone with ADHD, I look at normal people without ADHD and I feel like a day to them is just a day. Whereas me, it feels like there's like 5 days in a day. I can't
really
explain it. Yeah. I feel like just to get through one day, there's so much strain on me. And I felt like that from a very, very, very young age. And I always felt very out of place.
Did you mask a lot?
In what sense?
I don't think you masked a lot.
Did you mask the isms, the things that maybe made you feel or look, not look, but made you feel different towards others? Like when you were around the typical person, did you ever try and fit in and mask how you really felt?
So Sophie said that she didn't think I was, because I'll be honest with you, I know she's known me for a long time, as have you, Jade. And I think that as a kid, I wore a mask, but I was everyone's friend, okay? I was always quite, you know, sociable and a bit crazy, but my mask was, I was scared of that anyone would see the real me. So I became a bit of like, and this is actually quite typical in ADHD, I started to act like a rude boy, and like people, like, I wasn't a rude boy. Yeah. I was literally just like a Northwest London kid, but I acted like I was. And I think that it's those things that I put on a mask, because
yeah,
I didn't want anyone to know the real me, which was actually just a scared little boy who basically didn't want anyone to know that I was that. And, you know, I think I got diagnosed when I was 11 years old, but from about 8 to 11, I just, I was doing things that no other kids were doing, like
Samples.
Really severely misbehaving. I've always been a class clown, like completely and utterly obsessed with, like, with people seeing that I'm here.
The Joker.
You know, I was always the Joker. I was always quite naughty. I was never like a, you know, I was never like a really, really like disruptive kid.
This is just for... Because I've known you for very, very, very many years, what you're saying is exactly how I would look at you.
Yeah.
You were always the class clown, even though we weren't at the same school together, but you were so liked.
Yeah.
Like, everyone always liked you. You weren't, as you said, when you were the naughty boy.
Yeah.
You weren't like, oh, my God, he's getting up to so much trouble. He's an awful person.
Yeah.
You got away with murder.
Everything. Literally.
But you're still, to this day, many years, so respected.
Yeah.
He got away with so much because of his little cheeky, handsome face.
Yes.
That's why.
Thank you, Jade. Yeah, I don't know. I think that, for me, it did get worse. And I actually did a podcast about 2 years ago, and I actually had a lot of people that grew up with me calling me up after it, being like, I didn't know that that's what you went through. And that's because a lot of it was hidden. Yeah. And, you know, this mask was a big thing for me. And, you know, when I got diagnosed with ADHD, it was really, really painful, because at that point, and when we're talking like, you know, we're talking over 15, like,
yeah,
about 20 years ago, ADHD was looked at as like, if you had ADHD, you basically...
Not as accepted as it is now.
Literally. And I think that that was something that you know, you asked me the question before about what's it like now with everyone being diagnosed with ADHD. That's something that's quite like, it's a painful thing because it's like, I wish that everyone had ADHD then, because yeah. I was like the only kid at school with
ADHD.
What were
they like? Yeah.
And like, they treated me like I was like, had a severe, severe problem. Whereas actually my greatest strengths in life are my ADHD, but it felt like it was like you're a problem child and you should be on report and this and this and this. And everyone looked at me differently. And actually a lot of my addiction and my anger and like the reason I wanted to be this hard nut and wanted everyone to be scared of me was because of that. Mm. But the truth is that, I think it's a good thing from an awareness perspective. I didn't know what ADHD was. I just thought that if you've got ADHD, you basically...
just can't sit still.
You can't sit still and you're basically just written off. You're written off.
Really? Yeah. Can I ask you, when you got your diagnosis at 11, did your mum and dad tell you that you had ADHD or did they keep it from you for a while?
No, I knew that... This is the thing with me. Like, I knew I was an addict. I knew I had ADHD. I didn't necessarily knew what ADHD was, but like the things that I did were not normal. So when I looked at like around at my peers, I was very, very different. Like my hyperactivity and the highs and the lows and like the depression. And do you know what? I talk about it a lot now, but I didn't talk about it for about 15 years. Like, my first ever addiction actually was self-harm.
Wow.
And I never ever spoke about it.
I didn't know that.
I was embarrassed because I looked at self-harm as being like a feminine thing. Yeah. And like, I didn't want anyone to know. And
what age did this start for you?
This was about 10 years old at my primary school. And I was like cutting my arms with a compass.
At school. This time? Yeah.
And like that, and I look back now and it's funny, like, I stopped doing it by the time I got to secondary school. But like, I look back at that time and I'm like, why? Like, why did I, why? No one taught me that, by the way.
Do you remember how it felt?
It was like, it was a release, but it was 100% a cry for help.
Yeah.
But not at that point. At that point I was, and that's another thing, like, I was very, very suicidal as a kid, not knowing why. Like, I was just very broken and like, I was angry.
You were just like, undiagnosed.
And yeah,
just
really
to
angry.
Unwind about kind of like family life, just for people to listen, because I always try and put all the puzzles together to understand things. You were the first child.
Correct.
Your mum and dad are still together. You had a loving, big family home that everyone was welcome. I mean, we used to go every single weekend to your house. And when you're talking about this, because obviously there's things that I wouldn't know either, because I just know you as like my friend Josh.
Yeah.
It's like a surprise to hear that you had those thoughts and that you were in a really dark place, whereas everyone else thought, as I did, that you came from a really comfortable, happy, loving background.
Yeah.
So where could this be triggered from?
Listen, I would say that I've got a functional / dysfunctional family.
Yeah, agreed.
Everyone in my family has...
Suffers from something.
Right.
Okay. Whether it be bipolar, addiction, I would definitely say that there's some autism in my family. Like, everyone is on the spectrum somewhere or other. And it's funny because I was actually the catalyst for like the addiction part, which we will talk about afterwards, which sort of unearthed quite a lot of other things. But the truth is that there's always been, throughout my whole life, some kind of dysfunctional
There's always a
part.
Story or a journey, isn't
like
there?
Like, when I was born, my mum had severe postnatal depression, and I think I was in hospital with her from a very, very...
Wow.
But, like, do you know what? Obviously, I don't remember that. I was born. But I still think that, like, I was sheltered from a lot of these things, to be completely honest with you. It's like... Even though I didn't know that my family, you know, about my family history, because, you know, there's a lot of addiction in my family, which I'll go into. I didn't know any of it really until I started to become an addict. I genuinely just believe that it was my ADHD and my addictive tendencies that led me to
Do
that.
You not think, though, that you went down the addiction route because you were trying to self-medicate? Your ADHD.
100 Well,
were you medicated?
I was medicated, and
from 11.
That's what's quite interesting because I was I was on medication. I was on Concerta, which is basically like Ritalin. Mm-hmm. And I'm a very, very creative individual. I've always been very, very different to everyone else in the sense of like, if someone goes for that, I will go for something. Like I'm not a copycat. I'm one of these people that, you know, everyone goes and, you know, everyone at school would go and do, you know, in recruitment or property, I became a DJ, you know, I'm obviously with Can of Water, you know, I've always been very, very different. I wear what, I don't copy anyone. I do what I do. And I've always been like that as a...
I love that. That gives me hope.
An individual. Yeah, no, it should. when I started taking my medication, it removed all creativity.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. And it basically turned me into a robot.
Wow.
And what it did, that from what I can remember, what it did is I wake up in the morning and I am lost today.
Do you still take medication today?
No, I don't take medication. And I'll go into why I stopped. But I wake up every single day lost. Wow. I don't know what I'm doing and why and what I'm... Whereas everyone else's sort of components fit into place, I've got no components. It's like, it's weird, okay? And I think that it's the same with a lot of people with ADHD. If I don't get some kind of dopamine fix, whether it be like an ice bath or, this morning I went on a walk... listening to music or a podcast or something. If I don't get that in the morning, I am literally like fucked for the rest of the day.
Wow.
Yeah. And I need that. I really, really need that. And music is a massive, massive part of this and my mm-hmm. journey mm-hmm. and art. And when I went onto medication, I didn't wake up lost. Everything just fit.
Yeah.
Okay. That was good. But the person that everyone loved just disappeared.
Away.
Okay.
Josh went.
The Josh that everyone loved, the class clown, the mad lunatic.
Yeah.
So
you.
To get that back, I started drinking. Okay.
Because
then it made
ages?
Me hyper again. You know.
What sort of age did this
start? We're talking about 12 at this point. Okay.
It's mental.
I know.
Drinking.
Yeah,
alcohol.
Drinking.
Because if you think about your son, how old is Brody?
11.
Yeah.
He could start drinking next year.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
But saying that, I haven't met many people.
No, but I'm just saying when you put that thought together.
Yeah,
it's funny how medication has changed since you were first put on it, because my son won't mind me saying, my son's also been diagnosed with ADHD and he is medicated, but he's on a medication that only lasts up to 6 hours. So you still get his personality. He just says to me that he feels a lot calmer on it. He doesn't feel like his head's going a million miles an hour.
Yeah.
He's not thinking of 25 different things at the same time, especially being at school and doing exams.
Yeah.
But I can definitely tell when it's worn off, the difference it makes.
And listen, it has changed. And funny enough, like, this is something that I've actually started to look more back into, because things have changed. But what happened with me is I was on it and I obviously started drinking. I've always had an addictive personality, like my whole life, always, okay? Like the way that my head works, it can't understand how someone can just do one. Like, and that's been throughout my whole life. So if I have one cigarette, like 45 cigarettes at the end of the day later, like, and everyone's looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong? Like, what's wrong with you? And it's like, it gets into my head, these patterns and these things, to the point where by the time I stopped smoking at 22 years old, I was smoking 15 cigarettes a night before bed.
Wow.
Like, and like, my drinking was something that progressively got terrible from the age of sort of 12 to 13. And then obviously I stopped at 15. But this mask that we speak about, like, and this is the thing about with ADHD, like, you feel so lost and you feel like no one understands you. And especially if you're an addict as well, like, you just feel like you can't talk to anyone. So yeah, essentially I was on the medication. I started to drink quite a lot.
Do you remember your first drink and where you were? And who you were with?
Not really, no.
You don't remember that first one?
No, but what I do remember is that all the pain that I was in and all of like the anger and the, you know, the suicidal thoughts and the feeling of feeling lost just disappeared.
When you were drinking?
Yeah,
when
that's
you were
what
drunk.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm very close with my grandma and she had cancer at the time. And I think And my mum also had cancer. And I had a, you know, anyone that knows me will know that there was a lot of illness in my family.
A lot of cancer.
And I, you know, I basically just, I just drank to numb the feeling. Yeah. I didn't drink to get addicted, yeah. You know. But, you know, after 6 to 8 months, I just physically could not stop. And then for the next sort of 2.5, 3 years, it basically just spiraled out of control. And I went from being like this lovable human being who, even though I had ADHD and I, you know, that was...
You can still be lovable, you know, still with be ADHD.
Loved, you know, like people still loved me. And the funny thing is that everyone just loved me for... I was always trying to change me, and this is a crucial
and no one
part
wanted,
of it.
Yeah.
No one wanted to change. Everyone just loved the me. And that's what that's important to the me today.
Yeah.
Because I'm not medicated, and today I needed to be medicated then. Especially for school, funny enough, because I just, the concentration thing was horrendous.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to change me constantly, you know, and it's funny because even today, whether it be going to the gym or whatever it is, I'm always, it's a tendency always to just change.
The way you feel.
The way you feel. And I just, I went from being this person that I would turn up to the party and everyone loved, to being the person that no one wanted to be around, okay?
When you were in
when I was drinking. Yeah. I was drinking 3 bottles of vodka a day at 15, you know, drinking out of like, literally like plastic Evian bottles. That's probably why I don't drink out of plastic today.
Yeah,
And I just hated life, like genuinely hated life. And, you know, in those sort of 3 years of me drinking from like the age of 12 to 15, the trouble, you know, like just the shit that I would get up to and like the friends I'd be friends with. And it just, yeah, it just goes back to this thing. Like, I just wanted everyone to fear me.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to know.
You didn't want anyone to get too close to
you. I didn't want anyone
to,
I just didn't want to get vulnerable. And it's funny because today I'm so open and people are like, whoa, you're so open. And it's actually because I spent like half my life just hiding from people.
Yeah. I have to just, we just have to make this a bit comical. We went on holiday. I don't know if you remember. There was a lot of us on that holiday.
Part of it.
yeah, there you go. I don't, there must have been about 15 families. We all happened to be in the same place at the same time. Not all planned together.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how old we were, 12, 13?
Yeah, 13,
just
14, yeah.
Very, very drunk.
Yeah, that holiday, it was in Turkey, was probably like the worst, that was like my worst time. Like, I have amazing memories, but horrible memories of it, where I was just drunk the whole trip. And I don't know if you remember, I dyed my hair as well.
Yes, it was bright yellow blonde.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
And I was just drunk the whole time. And it got to a point where I couldn't do anything without being drunk. Like my whole day, even when I was at school, wherever I was, I needed to be drunk.
So were you drinking at school?
At school, yeah.
Did you take drink in with
you? Yeah, and it was funny, like, without someone that we all know, a friend of mine growing up, who basically asked for a water, and I basically said no, and she stole it out of my bag and drank it and realised it was vodka.
Oh, gosh.
I wouldn't have basically got caught.
I mean, thank God you did.
And your parents had no idea at this point.
No, I think that there were, I remember times where my parents were, listen, I was 15 and everyone was getting drunk.
Yeah.
But I was like going home and I'd crack open more and more and more. And I would spend my evenings just drinking by myself. And I just have vivid memories of me just walking around like where I grew up, just drunk the whole time. So my parents didn't see it. I would hide it, but like, you know, I can talk about this today and I'm ashamed, but I stole a lot of money, you know, to fund my addiction, which I continue to, paid for it now, but like, you know, I continue to sort of pay back just like above and beyond because I feel sick about it. But like, I would have done anything to have got drink or, you know, and that's
what happens
when you're an
addict. It doesn't matter about anything else apart from getting that drink or whatever you're addicted to. It doesn't matter that you're stealing from family. It's just that focus.
100%. Yeah. And like, so when you asked the question of like, did you know, like when I looked around, I didn't see anyone else that was doing this at 15 years old. So in my heart, even though I wouldn't have probably have wanted to admit it, I could easily turn around and say, well, my friends aren't waking up in trolleys in the middle of London. My friends aren't waking on the up on the side of like a train track, literally on the yellow line. You know, I'd wake up in like bushes, like before school. And like,
it's... Now that you're a dad.
Yeah.
How do you feel like your parents suffered? No, seriously.
Yeah, I feel sick. But you know what? Like,
I don't think a lot of it you couldn't control.
No.
Yeah,
I don't think you did it on purpose to be naughty. I think you couldn't help yourself.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And also you've got to remember as well, my mum's an addict.
Yeah.
Like my sisters are addicts. So and also like, you know, when I went into rehab, so I went into rehab at 15.
Whose choice was that? Yours?
I had a load of friends of mine sleeping around. And my dad told me he was taking me on a trip. I was paralytic. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, I was so drunk, I thought we were going somewhere. And then halfway through the car journey, he basically told me, we're going, I'm taking you to rehab. Anyway, I've kicked every single one of his windows in his car, single window, which I hardly remember, to be honest with you. And the next minute, I've woken up in rehab.
Wow.
It was 15th of July, 2006. And... probably like the scariest, but the best thing that's ever happened to me. Yeah. But you know,
and thank God that you had your dad and your family to support you. 100%,
definitely.
Because if you didn't have, lots of people don't have that support.
Well, a lot of people don't know this, but my cousin died of heroin. I never met her. But my other cousin, Tracy, she was like, at the time, I mean, she's phenomenal. She's probably now like, 26, 27 years clean. But like, wow. she was in recovery, and you know, my parents didn't really know what to do, but I was lucky that I had that in my life, you know, because she really, really sort of like, I looked up to her and she sort of explained it to me, because like being an addict and having ADHD is like being in fucking Narnia. That's what the way that I'm being serious. Like, and this is the one thing I would say about both. If you, and this is something that's really difficult, and this is why I think that this is my pro about what's going on in the world at the moment with everyone getting ADHD, is there's a lot of people talking about what it is. Mm-hmm. I would do things. That, as an example, I'd be speaking to you right now and I'll just forget a word. And I'll be like, I had no idea why I did it for so many years. And I feel like, now I might follow an ADHD Instagram page, or I might follow, a podcast or whatever. And then I'll be like, oh, I do that. That's what I do. And there's never been more understanding of what ADHD is.
Yeah.
And when I got diagnosed with it, there was nothing. Yeah. It was just like, you're naughty.
Yeah.
That's it. And I think that is something that is really, really bad. So going into rehab and learning about why I was the way that I was horrible and tough, because I'm a 15-year-old kid. I'm sitting in a fucking rehab with 50, 60-year-olds.
Yeah,
okay, petrified, crying myself to sleep every night. Yeah. It was the only rehab in the country that would take on people under 16. So I was by myself, segregated in like this wing, around people that were not well. And, you know, I was very, very scared. But every single thing that every single person said in group therapy, I'm sitting there thinking, fuck, this is me.
Yeah.
This is me. So like, and at that point, like, even though I was there for my parents, I was petrified. These people were the most fucked up people I've ever met in my life. And they're telling my story.
Yeah.
But
in
how
their
lucky
own words.
Are you that you were so young to be able to deal with that then? Because there's people that
100%
aren't that young.
I mean, everyone said the same thing to me. Like, they would cry in my arms, like these old, like 50, 60, 70, 80-year-olds being like, please just
get it
and keep it and just know, because, you know, they have ruined what they believe to be their life. And, you know, being in rehab, I was there for 4 weeks. It was just the most horrible thing ever. All of my friends were on camp and they would do it. They were away for summer and I was there. And, you know, I remember being on a call with a good friend of mine, and she was like, oh, we were at a party the other day and everyone was there, and there was like 150 people there, and someone screamed saying, Josh White's in rehab. And I remember like literally just my whole life just crumbling.
Oh.
And I couldn't, the old me would have gone and fucking tried to have done something, because that was the this crazy mentality that I had, but I couldn't do anything. I remember smashing up like half of the rehab, being angry. And that's a massive part of my journey is the anger, mm-hmm. which like, you know, is something that I'll come back onto because I'm a different person today. But being in rehab was horrible, to be honest with you, really painful.
So what do you think changed it all for you? When was the turning point for you that you accepted or got on with it or...
I didn't really for like another few years when like me, you know, when me and you were like, you know, well, we're inseparable. But yeah. like I sort of like came out of like treatment.
So and let's just explain like how we know each other.
Well, you can do it. You go.
Okay. I'm also a recovering addict.
Yeah.
And I met Josh in the rooms.
Yeah.
How many years ago?
Well, when would you have come in?
I think I must have been in my early 20s.
I think that it must have been like 2008, 2009. Yeah.
Something like that. So how many years is that?
Well, I went in 18 years ago. So it's probably about like 16 years ago.
15, yeah. 16 years ago. Yeah, that's where we met basically.
Yeah.
And my husband. And I mean, those times, that first 2 years in recovery saved my life.
Yeah.
And I think it did that for a lot of us. We had a really, really close circle of friends that just got us through everything.
So I think for me, because I was so young, it has saved my life, but it didn't then.
Yeah.
I came out and I was just angry. Like I was sitting in AA or AA meetings with my hood up. I was angry. Everyone would speak. I just didn't want to talk to anyone. I just... And obviously, like, you came in probably, like, 2 years later. Yeah. But, like, for my first 2 years, I was so angry. I didn't want to be there. Mm-hmm. My friends were out, like, getting drunk. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't. And the truth is that when I came out of rehab, there was about five people that died. And there was about... And the rest of the people, basically, it was about probably about 20 of us. And the rest of them all relapsed. Wow. So I was one of the only sober people, but...
So there was no relapse for you ever?
No, there was. In the future, but okay. I came out and I didn't relapse, and I was only in for my parents. I didn't want to stay sober. Yeah, I wanted to go out and get drunk and smoke weed, but I couldn't. I was scared that I was going to end up like those people, and I was there for my parents. Another really, really big thing as well is that they pulled me off of my ADHD medication.
Who, mum and dad did?
No, the doctors.
Okay.
Because, the rehab.
Yeah, because they believed that that's what triggered my addiction.
Oh, wow.
At the time. Because a lot of the medication back then was highly addictive.
Yeah. Wow,
highly
okay.
addictive. So they believed that that's what triggered it. And I get that. It was very, very, very addictive. And I think that if I hadn't have gone into rehab, if I hadn't have drunk, I just would have taken more of that drug, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. So came off of the pill. So at this point, I'm literally stone cold sober.
Wow. And stone cold,
no ADHD
Josh.
Medication, no drink, no drugs, smoking 30 cigarettes a day at the time.
Climbing the walls.
I was in a bad place. And all I could turn to was anger. I was so angry. Mm-hmm. And this is something that you'll find with a lot of ADHD, autistic, bipolar addiction is that like, because you're unheard... Okay. And because you're like, you feel like you're a minority and you just, the schooling system, especially for me at that time, was not built for me. Okay. I wasn't part of. So I was just angry. And I came out of rehab and for the next 2 or 3 years, I was just angry. I got in some serious trouble. Jade, you'll remember this. I was in court for 2 years for something that that happened on my driveway.
Yeah.
Someone got severely hurt. I ended up basically, I didn't do anything, but I was in court for it and nearly ended up going to prison for it, which was for 6 months, which was petrifying. And I didn't, thank God. And that all happened when I was sober. And for those 3 years, I was just angry, fighting people, doing shit that why would I ever do it? And it's funny because when I tell people now this, like if they ask me a story, or whether it be like my wife or like they just can't believe that the person I am today was that person. But that was me. I was not a good person.
But that's why you're so inspiring and for people to listen to this. You've had the most hella journey.
Yeah.
And
that's
you haven't even. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. But it's from, do you know what it is? It's all about, I keep going back to the mask. It's all about the mask. It's when you truly find yourself and you actually start to like you, you actually start to
accept yourself.
I couldn't spend one day by myself.
You had people over all the time. You were always with someone.
Everyone asks now why. It was because I couldn't be. I hated myself. I hated everything.
You sit with yourself, your head, with everything.
Exactly.
So how do you feel today? Because I know you said that you still wake up and you still are lost and you still need something to get your day going. Mm. Can you do life on your own? I mean, you're here today
listen,
on your own.
I love me now.
That's amazing.
You
know,
so amazing.
Which is... has taken a long, it's a battle. But the truth is that every single day is the same day as it was when I was a kid, you know, with the same mind, same, you know.
So would you ever think about going back on medication?
So it's something that I've, funnily enough, been, like, have thought about over the years, yes. Am I scared? Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Yes, because I had a bad, it's not even a bad experience. I had an experience, okay. But the truth is that, and this is the important part of the message, is that ADHD is a skill. Okay, I wouldn't be where I am without it.
It's not
okay?
an illness.
Yeah, and it's not an illness at all. And I speak a lot about ADHD on a lot of podcasts and to a lot of people. And the truth is that my addiction and ADHD are very, very similar. Okay, and in my opinion, over the years. From speaking to people with addiction who have ADHD, it's like, I need pick-me-ups. I need it every single day, a few times a day, okay? Yeah. If I don't get it in the morning and I don't get it at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm done. I could be falling asleep at three. As soon as I get to the gym, I'm wide awake, I'm ready. It's the reason why a kid with ADHD like me could sit in a maths class and not listen to a fucking thing. Yeah. But then I'm in art or music and I'm like, I'm wired.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I was a graffiti artist and I'm drawing and I'm literally, I could draw for 7 hours nonstop.
Yeah.
I think it's the things that you like, you
passionate
put
about.
Your all into, and the
exactly.
things that you don't, you just can't be bothered.
100%. And that's why I say to anyone with ADHD, you need a hobby.
You
need something.
Passion.
So for me, when I came out of rehab, even though I was doing it for my whole childhood since I was 11 years old, I threw myself into DJing because I was and am completely and utterly obsessed with music and art and culture. Okay. Like if anything's like fashion or music, or if something's a bit, I'm obsessed, and I've been obsessing about it since as far as I can remember. And I think for me, my biggest fear was that I wouldn't be able to go to a club getting fucked with my mates. So what did I do? I just became the DJ at all the clubs that they were at.
We used to come to all the clubs, you know, and you used to be the
DJ. Like, that was my thing.
But that's amazing that you could do that, as in you knew you couldn't go to the clubs and get fucked with your friends anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So how else can I kind of fit in
still
be that that main character in a different way? And so you used your ADHD and your addiction to make you
100%.
To make something else. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny.
I think that's a skill.
Yeah, it is. And that's where, like, that's the quality of ADHD.
Yeah.
It's this hyper-focus. I remember I was obsessed with Drake. And I remember there was a lyric that Drake said, and it was like, while all my friends are out partying, I make all the lyrics that they party to. So, like, that is what I wanted to be. I wanted to be the person that was like, and that's what I became, you know? And that's, you know, that's what I've always done. I had an events company, you know, when I was 18 and, you know, was doing some massive events with, like, a lot of people in the grime scene. And then, obviously, with Cano and everything, like, I always wanted to be, I crave for, like, difference. Mm-hmm. It's really, really strange, but that's where my... I think that most people are just happy with normality.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I wish that was me.
Do you though? Because look at your life now.
No, I know, but...
I think it's a strength.
The head fuck is hard. So managing this is hard. But the output and the craziness, like, I'll be doing stuff at work and people will just be like, and I'll come up with an idea and they'll just be like, how on earth did you just come up with that idea?
And you weren't even talking about it. It's just come out of nowhere.
I can fix problems like that. I just go into this mode. It's fixed, done. Whereas most people are just like, oh, I need to do this and this and this.
They
it's like steps.
Over it.
It's like, no, there's no steps for me. Like, I'm done. And that's the positive.
Yeah.
The negatives are like, and this is where addicts come into it, is that when you want more. And it's like, you know, like you look at some of the most creative people of all time and they get into like the worst drug addictions, whether it be like Amy Winehouse or whoever it is. That is that I'm telling you now, that is ADHD and addiction crossing. Their minds are working overdrive that they crave more and more and more and more and more, and they need more and more and more. And whatever they were doing is not doing enough. And I get that. And I have to, you know, for me, if I don't go to the gym or if I don't,
See, I think you're very lucky because you have recovery within that.
Agree. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, listen, the program of like doing the 12 steps and going through a program saved my whole life.
And I think it that helped with me. Your ADHD as well.
Listen, I never in a million years thought I could stop smoking. I was, by the time I stopped smoking, I was on like 45 cigarettes a day. Everyone around me like was like looking at me like, what is wrong with you? It's disgusting. And I just stopped. One day I got so ill for about 2 weeks and I just, I couldn't do it anymore. Yeah, I couldn't do it. And everyone around me was like, well, if he can stop, you know, I can stop. And, you know, that is another superpower. Like there's a lot of things that I do struggle with. Food, massively struggle with food. And people look at me like, you struggle with food massively.
What's your struggle with food?
Just like overeating. Like massively. It's another thing that I could be embarrassed to talk about because it's something that, but the truth is it's important
to
talk about.
There needs to be more people like you.
It's important. Well, I've learned that because like, you know, it's,
and funny enough, I've learned that through,
I've learned that through podcasts actually, funny enough. So it's so important because I'll hear someone talking about something quite open and I'll be like, you know, and you're right. That is like,
you can relate to it.
A big thing for me is around men's mental health, just around, like, I will sit with a group of boys and all they want to talk about is football and money and work. And it's all rubbish. And if actually, if you ask them how they are, they're like, oh, what, And they don't want to talk about it. And I'm like, what do you mean? And actually, when you get to the bottom of it, they're fucked. They're not, you know, and that is the problem with a lot of people in the UK, is that, and we are becoming a lot more open as a generation. But people, if people spoke a lot more, and that's the greatest thing about recovery, is that you're in a room with people. I've got a saying that strangers saved my life. You know, like I walked into a room, no one took any money from me, okay, and all they wanted to do was help me.
Yeah,
no one outside of recovery has that. You know, it's sad. You know, there are people that are suffering every single day, and they're just talking to nobody.
How lucky were we? We so saved lucky. Each other's lives.
Yeah, and that is like the. That's the Narnia of it.
Yeah.
You know, you're walking into a room that feels like you're like, no one knows that that's there until they walk through the you know, the wardrobe. And that, you know what? I'm very, very fortunate. I've been in recovery and I've been, so in 2 weeks' time, I'll be 15 years clean, which is mad. But I've been in recovery for over half my life, you know, and the truth is like from that, I've, like what one thing that I think's like been beyond important and has got to me to the person I'm today, like forget Cano and the business, like forget that. And any of the success that I might like, you know, have, which is all perception anyway. The truth is that without having a normal mind and basically the love for myself and being like, you know, the better person only comes from working on myself. That's like the most important
thing.
Accepting
yourself, that's the biggest thing.
And I've been, remember, I've been working, I've been seeing therapists and psychiatrists since I was probably like 11 years old. Yeah. And like, even though I fucking hated it, and my dad would drop me there and the majority of the time I'd just leave and he wouldn't even know. I'd just get on like the train or whatever. But working on myself is the greatest gift of all time.
But do you feel like it's an everyday job? Like you have to work every on yourself
day.
Every day?
I was up this morning at 6 a.m. going on a walk. Every single time I wake up, I'm like, I don't want to do this. And then there's something in my mind which says, get the fuck up and do it. And
it's, you know, it benefits
it's so important. And
you're a better person for it.
That's the thing that I know now, is that like going to the gym and like the feeling I get after having an ice bath is like the worst feeling of all time. But the
sounds
feeling
like hell.
Is hell. But
oh,
the
I've
feeling
done it.
After,
my husband's obsessed
you know,
with
yeah,
ice
the
baths.
Feeling after, all of these things, it's all about that feeling afterwards. And I always feel better. It's like going to a meeting, like an AA meeting. I walk in, I fucking hate life. I walk out, I feel so much better. And I think that this journey, like we live on this path, and I think that. We're just navigating this path.
But we live on a path that's a typical path that that's how people know life, whereas a lot of people in this world are not typical.
But I do think that the world is becoming more accepting of it.
Becoming more accepting, but if you don't change your path, if I didn't change, so if
but you've got to want to.
Yeah, you have to want to, but if I didn't change my path,
who knows where you'd probably not be.
I'd be dead. I'd be dead.
Yeah.
Factually, okay? I would have got up to the got up to no good. I probably either would have got stabbed or something for doing something stupid, but by being drunk, because I just the amount of stuff that I would do, or I would end up basically in prison. It wouldn't have ended well.
No.
And you know, it's funny, without my dad as well, like my dad's a very. Someone said to me something recently, Simon Squibb, I'm going to shout him out. He's a great guy. And he goes out to people and asks people what their dreams are. You've probably seen him on TikTok. He's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I did a podcast with him recently and he said to me, because he knew I was having a baby, he was like, babies don't do what you say. They do what you do. Mm-hmm. And it's so true.
Yeah.
I never did what, if my parents told me to, if they told me anything, I'd literally just tell them to piss off.
Yeah.
But I always followed in my dad's footsteps, always.
Yeah. Speaking on children, do you have any worries or concerns that you might pass something to your child, whether it be genetically ADHD or addiction or spectrum disorder? Does that ever go through your mind?
Yeah, all the time. You know, this has been a big thing for me. Funny enough, my mum's adopted, and in COVID, I found her real family. It was something that I really wanted to do. And I found her real sister. I connected her with her. And my mum didn't want to go on the journey because it was painful for her, but she let me go on the journey on behalf of her. That's an addict, that is.
Yeah.
And one of the main reasons is because I'm interested in like my bloodline. And
DNA.
And you know, there's a lot of autism in my mum's real side of the family. And there's funny that there's like a lot of entrepreneurialism as well. And there's a lot of sort of, I'm sure there's addiction here and there. The addiction is more from my dad's side of the family, but not knowing what.
So bless you, you never had a chance.
No,
Yeah, but what about your siblings? Do they have a chance or do they all have something, do you think?
No, they've all got, all got something. Yeah, yeah. We've all got something. Like, you know, he wouldn't mind me saying this, probably got a bit of autism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
And I think that the truth
is... He's amazing we work together.
Exactly. I love him. But yeah, do you know what? The most important thing about me finding that bloodline was to learn for my daughter. And I saw a therapist in COVID. And one of my biggest things was being scared that like all the things that my parents have sort of put me through unintentionally. Yeah. My dad lost his dad at a very, very, very young age. My mum suffers severely with anxiety throughout my whole life. And it was quite dysfunctional, even though they were loving.
They did the best they could do.
They did the best they could do. But
and again, they're such lovable, lovely characters.
Yeah, exactly. But they didn't really know. I would say that. They were child adults. That's what my parents are.
Yeah.
I'm more of an adult than them. And that was very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. And, you know, I think me and my siblings have all learned that now. And, you know, one of the things I said to the therapist is that, you know, I really, everything that I've worked hard on, and my wife is very, very grounded. She's very, very different to me. Comes from a very, very different family.
She's gorgeous,
there's not a lot of dysfunctional.
No,
there
she
probably
seems
is,
very
but it's
like
not like
straight.
My, very, very.
Yeah. Like no,
and,
non-typical.
You know, like she's always saying to me, like she hears stories about me. You know, we'll be out and that someone will see me that knew me when I was younger. And they would say to my wife, like, you don't understand. The Keys was a fucking lunatic when he was younger. How is he the person
so
he is today?
Did she not know that's
not
that
really
natural.
A little bit. No, you know,
she knows me, but only
from what she's heard. And she's like, oh my God, it scares me. And it's funny, this therapist I shared with him, I was like, I'm really nervous. And he said, what started with you will end with you.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that really was important for me. And that's like, I am very, very, very different to my parents. I love them dearly. But like, you know, I've seen growing up people whose their parents are alcoholics and they become alcoholics. And, you know, there is, you know, for me, it's really, really important that by the time I had a kid that I'd learned enough about myself to be the best version for them.
But I do feel that they didn't, our parents at that time didn't have the support and
they weren't equipped.
They didn't have the means like we do today.
That's why it's amazing that my parents put me in rehab.
Yes.
Because, like, they didn't have to.
The same.
You know, they really, really didn't have to. And, you know, they could have just let, you know, he's 15, he'll be fine. And that is a blessing.
Not at the time. But no, now not
but,
back
but looking back at it, 100%. And I think that, you know, I don't know. I think that I look at...
So do you have worries?
I do have worries, yeah, I do. But my point of the whole overarching thing is that she has me.
But it's a superpower. It's not a bad thing.
And I think the more open you are, the better. And I think that that's like having a good version of me is what will help her, if she does have it, get through it. Because, and that's the thing, like I'm very close to my siblings. I'm very close with, you know, I speak openly about this every day. I don't hide from it. You know, I speak openly. So I want my daughter to know that, you know, she can talk to me.
Well, knowledge is power.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but she's support.
Yeah. Mm. Listen, there are definitely tendencies there. She's fucking she's like...
we've heard September's, she's the most plastic, gorgeous little girl.
No, she is. But like September will be like, she's going mad now. And like, listen, I who cares? Like, 100%. She's who she is.
But
like,
you know what? Advice just beautiful. From us being parents of send children, don't do what we do and worry every day and look for things. Just enjoy her.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, I think that is something that is...
What will be, will be.
What will be, will be. And just accept it. Yeah. Like, I think you can preempt everything and project into the future and create scenarios in your head.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Fear is, what is it? False evidence appearing real. Yeah, you know, it's not real. It's just, it's just, and that's the thing. Like, I spent half of my life, it's funny actually, like this is something that's really important. Like, I spent half of my life being worried about where I was going to be, dreaming of being where I am today. And like, the truth is, like, I want, like, from the person that wanted to kill himself to the person I am now, like, I could have taken my life and I just never would. And the truth is that, you know,
you were born
to
be in this,
you know,
life.
You can't, you can't project because you just never know.
Joshy,
you
just never know. You're bloody brilliant.
You are. Thanks, and babes. You were born to carry on being who you are because you inspire so many people.
I'm inspired.
Totally.
Honestly.
Well, just to kind of like round it all up, if you could just sum up what life is like being diagnosed as ADHD and a recovering addict, what could you tell everyone?
So I think the old me would have said, like, as I said before, like, very lost, very confused, not really understanding my purpose. But with purpose, like, you're just you're unstoppable and you will outgrow anyone around you because you hyper-focus and fixate on things that when you fixate on the right things, you just become like, you know, you can just become the greatest.
Unstoppable.
So it is, you know, and the truth is that can of water actually is a great example where 1,000 people told us that we couldn't do it and thought it was the most stupid idea of all time, but it needed ADHD brains to come together and basically just be like, no, fuck that. And to have that ADHD naughtiness of like, we're gonna do it, and the business wouldn't be here today if we had listened to normal people.
Yeah,
you know, I like to say typical people.
the typicals, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I think being abnormal is actually better. That's my view.
So let's embrace
love that.
Thank you so much, Josh.
We love you.
Love you.
Thank you.